Okay.
Let's have the discussion. You're listening to Canter with Scott and Paul.
Hello and welcome to Canter. You've got the whole Canter crew here tonight. We've got Paul and myself and Adam, joined by Mr. Jose from the Czech Republic. Welcome to the show, Mr. Jose.
Hello, guys. Nice to see you. Nice to meet you.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining us on the show, Jose. Can you please tell our listeners a bit about yourself? You're from the Czech Republic. Tell us a bit about your background and how you came to the cannabis space.
Yeah, it would be a pleasure for me. So I'm from Czech Republic. This is a small country in the middle of Europe. And I'm a book author and grower. I wrote two books about cannabis growing. One is about indoor growing and the second one is about outdoor growing. Until now, I translated to six languages. Actually, the sixth is the Spanish and it will be published within a few weeks or in next 1 or 2 months. So I started to write books like 10 years ago about it. I also cooperate with several magazines, mostly in Europe, German Grow Magazine, Hive Magazine, Soft Secrets in Italy, Germany, UK, Poland. So until now, I have books in Czech language, German, English, Polish, Italian, and the Spanish one will come out. I'm also working as a grower for a private company who has a license for growing here in Czech, but we grow only on experimental level, so we cannot sell anything or make some production for pharmacies. So I started to grow like more than 20 years ago already, and yeah, I'm very happy that during the last 10 years, it's also something I can get money from. So it's like my work is my hobby. So I think it's this is the best what the man can reach.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. I think most of our guests so far have said the same thing, that this is their hobby and it's their passion and it's not like work for them. It's ideal.
Exactly.
When you say experimental growing, is that like research? Research growing forward.
Yeah. There are some companies who want to try some new products, so they pay some money and we can do it for them. Or we have also some request from the state. Agencies for we can work, you know. So it's like cooperation of several companies and several universities. We do some research on this way, you know, because I cannot talk too much about what we do there because I cannot publish it to the public. And so most of the trials we are doing there are like not very secret, but company who pay for it don't want us to talk about it too much.
Yeah, so you got to protect the intellectual property of the employers.
That's it.
Yeah, very cool. It's something I didn't know about you, Jose, so that's cool. Well done, mate. Well done in getting into the space. That's really cool. So, Jose, you live in the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic is a really fascinating country. You guys have been through so much over the years, over the last few decades particularly. A lot of evolution of your society and your political system over the last 30-odd years. Can you run us through your views on how things have changed in the cannabis space in the Czech Republic over the years?
Yeah, I remember something already because I started to I'm boy of 70s, so It was deep communism when I was born. And when revolution came and communism ended here in Czech, I was like 14 years old. And you know that in 14 years, when you are 14, you start to explore what is the life about. So I got in touch with cannabis very soon, and I met like all the friends who already had experiences from even from communist times, you know. So I know that cannabis was already present in Czech during the communism time, but it was not so spread, you know. So in '90s, there were no rules for cannabis use in the beginning, because communists didn't talk about the drugs too much, so they didn't make also the laws for that, if you understand. So in early 90s or in the middle of 90s, it was discussion in parliament about legality or illegality of cannabis and cannabis use. Yeah. So in that time, it was not too many people had information about it. Like in society, lots of people didn't know what cannabis is. Everybody knows the ropes and all this stuff. So, but they have no experience with smoking, or we had not in our society didn't have experience with junkies or people who use drugs on the street. Yeah, because during the communism, it was not possible to see people like that in the street, and also clubs was not working as we know it at the moment. So it was completely different time comparing to nowadays. And but the government didn't make cannabis completely legal. The first what I remember was that it was legal to hold a smaller amount than bigger. So it was was not like less than 10 grams or more than 10 grams. It was like a smaller amount than is a big amount.
That was actually how it was written as well, isn't it? That's how it was written into the legislation. Yeah. The amount must be smaller than a large amount.
Yeah, exactly.
So entirely open to interpretation by any police officer.
Exactly.
That's fascinating.
So you can say it's a kilo for me. It's not a big amount enough, you know.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's my wife. I remember when I first moved to the Czech Republic, my wife told me about that law, which I think was still the legislation at the time, and I just couldn't believe that was how it was worded.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So and during the time, like. My feeling is that the society in Czech Republic is open to cannabis.
Absolutely.
Like people, normal people, you know, you can see quite often to see the cannabis plants in someone's garden. Mm-hmm. You know, you can smell it somewhere around, and nobody is like scary. You know,
In the parks. Oh, I feel. In the parks, you know, you have such a great park culture there. And you can walk through the park and there can be police and no problem.
Yeah. I think that smoking in parks, it's like something what is typical for Czech cities. You know, like we went also to parks quite often to smoke joint, you know, so.
Yeah, quite a free thinking society for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, our government didn't make it legal anytime. Yeah, so at the moment, I want to get back yet in the end of '90s and beginning of new millennium. I knew lots of people who were smoking weed, and you cannot be very scary. Because if you smoke weed, you were stoned, and somebody stopped you driving car, they didn't make any test because they didn't have any, you know.
Yeah.
It was like a smaller group of people who was smoking weed, but it was not so small. Mm-hmm. You know, we already had the grow shops and all these stuff around. And our society is really open to cannabis, yeah. But government is not. Maybe it's because our neighbor is Germany, and we are very influenced by what Germans' politic is in this way. Maybe if our neighbor will be Canada, maybe we will have completely different laws about cannabis. Because when I was driving, for example, to Germany, when I was a little bit younger, I got checked all the time if I have cannabis in my car or if I'm stoned. So three times I paid some fee for I was a little bit stoned, yeah, or I had 2 grams of weed in my car, you know. So it was like it is like Germans customs and German government also didn't want us to make a law more friendly to cannabis users. Yeah. So at the moment you can have like less than 10 grams, but you can have it. It's not breaking the law. It's like, it's not the law possession. It's like you can pay some fee. It's not legal, but it's not a law possession. It's like when you're driving a little bit fast with your car. But if you have more than 10 grams, you can go to you can have court and you can pay some more money. Yeah. But you will not go for jail to jail for 10 grams for sure. Lots of people think that it's legal to grow cannabis plants in Czech Republic. What is also not true. It's absolutely not legal. We have some five plants are tolerated, so it's in some way.
Decriminalization, right?
But it's not decriminalization. In some way, it's tolerated. But there is a big problem. If you harvest more than 10 grams, mm-hmm. it's law possession.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody who knows how the plants looks like, yeah? So 10 grams, it's not a big amount. Yeah.
Yeah.
And second thing, what is problem is that when you cut your plants, even if you have only 10 grams or that on it, if you cut it and start drying, it's like a preparing of drug. Yeah. And this is, if you prepare drugs, it's always law possession.
Yeah, okay.
It's always a crime, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I explain a good law possession and crime, I mean the same. Yeah, so.
Yeah. So do you get it? Yeah. If you're pulled over in the street with 5 grams on you, you don't get a criminal record, do you? It doesn't go down against your name for job prospects.
You don't get any criminal record, but they can get all the weed from you, yeah. And you can pay some
pay a fine. Here in Australia, we call that decriminalisation. So it would basically mean that it's an offence, but it's not a criminal offence. So you will get a fine for things that are decriminalised, and obviously confiscation. But you don't you don't get the criminal record, which can have long-term repercussions on job prospects and and other things for travel and things like that. So I think compared to where we are, that's a considerably more tolerant approach to the legalization.
Okay.
The other thing that's fascinating there, you guys have full access to cannabis seeds. There's seed stores throughout most of the cities in the Czech Republic. Can you explain that a bit?
Like a seed stores?
Yes. Yep.
You mean?
Yep.
Yeah. It's based on, how it started. Seeds were in Czech Republic all the time, but not in the shops. But one day, one shop here in Czech, They call it their company Five Seeds.
Piet Semmen.
In Czech Republic, they started to sell seeds legally, like legally. They started to sell it like
openly,
not secretly, but they put it on the shelves, you know. And they tried it, and nobody was against. You know, you know. Sometimes you have to try to sell something, and you are busted or not. So they was saying that they have many lawyers that who tell them that it's not illegal, that THC is illegal, but it's not present in seeds. So they can sell seeds as a collector's stuff, you know. They cannot say tell people to grow it, you know, but they can sell it. So, yeah, and since that time, there are many seed shops also. You can buy it in non-stop shops also, you know, like
corner store.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Tabak.
So, yeah, exactly. So you can buy it very easily here. And it is for maybe more than 10 years, I think. It works like this here. But in 2012 or 2013, I don't remember exactly, but anyway, there was a big hunt for on grow shops here, because somebody from National Anti-Drug Institute came to with the idea that it's not good when you sell equipment for cannabis growing. You sell seeds, you are selling also papers and all this head shop stuff for smoking. And you also have informations like, for example, my book about cannabis growing. If you have it in one shop, then they came with the idea that it's some kind of crime. I cannot remember the name now, but it's like that you're promoting drug use, you know. And they busted like lots of grow shops. They came there, start to get all the stuff from them and close grow shops, tried to close them. Some shops really closed because the smaller shop didn't have enough money to buy a new stuff and to start to continue with selling. But this, like a result of this action from the state or from the police, was that shops divided to make two shops. They make seed shops and they make grow shops. So it's funny because you can have two companies in one shop in the end, and you can buy equipment and seeds as well. But most of shops divided to, let's say, two doors.
Yep.
Yeah. And now you cannot, in grow shops, it's hard to get some information about cannabis growing because this is, of course, if you sell a magazine or book, you have a small profit from it. But if you sell, equipment for growing or seeds, your profit is higher. So if there is a chain, like the government said, you cannot sell equipment, seeds, head shop stuff, and information in one shop. So they broke the chain, and the easiest way was to get off the information. You know what I mean? Like magazines and books. Yep. from grow shops. Yeah. So lots of grow shops works until today, and there is a huge amount of grow shops who works only online. Like they have electronic shops with equipment, seeds, and vaporizers and all this stuff around cannabis. So yeah. And nowadays, you can also buy lots of CBD weed and CBD hash here in Czech. So especially in Prague, Prague is like specific because it's a biggest city of Czech Republic and lots of tourists is there. And also, you know, also police is not so strict as in smaller cities of, let's say, 50,000 people. If somebody open shop with dried butt, doesn't matter if it's CBD or what is inside, that it will be on in a small city. Cops will probably came to check what's going on there, because in smaller cities it's always like that. Especially, it's like that in Czech. Maybe it's the same as in Australia. I don't know. I have no idea about it. But it's easier to hide in Prague with your shop or with your stuff than in smaller cities, of course. So, yeah. CBD is like a new boom, like everywhere.
Yeah, it's something I wanted to bring up in this chat as well. The CBD scene that's pretty much boomed, particularly in Prague. So now you have these forms that you've touched on of CBD dispensaries where they're selling CBD flower, CBD hash, CBD oil, all of these CBD-based products. And it seems to be paving the way for the corner stores that we spoke about earlier, the Tabaks, to also start selling vapes and vape cartridges full of CBD. And it just seems to have really taken off there. Can you tell us, is it quite widely accepted by the general population from what you can feel?
I tell you my feeling. Yeah? Like, first of all, I think that cannabis should be legal.
Yeah,
doesn't matter if it's CBD, THC, whatever. I think that all the adult people should have some kind of access to all drugs they want, because I would like people to be more responsible for what they are doing. Yeah? Mm-hmm. But I have not enough power or information to make some decision for all the people. But anyway, cannabis should be legal from my point of view. What is happening now with all the CBD? I'm not very happy about it, because I think that there are two things. One is CBD products like oils, tinctures, and all these stuff, which can help people with their to get healthy or with some issues about health. It's okay, but I'm not very okay with dried CBD cannabis itself, because from my point of view, it's like something what you cheat tourists with, you know. Yeah, okay. Because lots
it's
of
like going to a bar and drinking non-alcoholic beer.
yeah, weed is legal here, let's buy it, you know. They don't even know what they are buying.
Because
lots of this weed, you don't know from where is this weed in the end, you know. You know that there are some ways how they get the THC from it, or make a THC level a little bit lower to be under 0.3 or 0.2, depending on the states where you are. So it's not the weed I would like to smoke. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I think it would be good if people can have access to good quality weed, like the weed about, you know, where it comes from, how it was grown, and you have some, you know, what quality it is, you know. So this CBD stuff without a clear source, it's not, from my point of view, it's not good way. And the second problem is, I know that it's also a little bit cheating the law, on the other hand, because it's not easy to get all the time the same THC level, especially when you talk about such a small amount as 0 point something. It's very easy to get 0.2 and 1.2 percent on one plant. So I think it's a, it could be a problem for the future, also for the people who sell this wheat, because I don't believe it's like 100% under the limit all the time.
Yeah,
if you understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah?
And you can see one thing is that there are really specialized shops where you can get in. You can ask what is CBD and how it can help you, or you can go there and can say, for example, I have chronic pain. I use lots of drugs and I cannot, I have no, some good result from that. I would like to try something else. And in the specialized shop, you can meet a guy who will tell you, okay, I know what is it about. Maybe for you would be good these pills. Try first to get one a day. Try it for 1 week and you will see if something will happen. So if you go shop into shop when where the shop assistant knows what he is selling and he can give you some information about it, it's absolutely okay, and I'm for that for it. It's like I will support it. But if you go to a shop where they sell bananas, coffee, beer, cauliflower, or whatever, and they have a hashish, CBD hashish for 10 euros gram, and they tell you you can buy 10 grams and you will be happy, you know. So it's not a good it's not good thing. Also, it's not good things for our society, like a cannabis society, cannabis people, you know.
With the CBD boom and all that, are you finding, because there's little to no like THC in there, people are going back to the black market and going to like a dodgy dealer and buying from?
I'm not sure too many of the cannabis consumers that were on the black market, to be honest, from what I've gathered over there, have even switched to the CBD.
Okay.
And as Jose touched on, I think it is primarily tourists or people that aren't consuming cannabis prior that are moving to these CBD products. And I think that's what Jose is concerned about. So yeah, am I right there, Jose?
Yeah. You are absolutely right. So the you know, I don't have any CBD shop. So I cannot tell you what is a target group or what is the people who go there. And also, but I have a friend who have it, who has it, and CBD target group or people who go to CBD shop to buy weed are not regular stoners, of course, because they want a high THC mostly. But the people who don't want to, who want to continue with cannabis use, like they want to continue with smoking, but they don't want to be stoned, this is good group, for example, for CBD stuff, because they have taste, they have a smell, you know, they have the ritual to, they can continue with, but they are not stoned. They can work, they can take care about their family, and they have their ritual. They can keep their ritual, if you understand. So this is one group from what I know. The second group is, as I told you, like people who want to know what is CBD. They want to know how cannabis can, how they can use cannabis for their health issues, you know. And the third group, of course, are the tourists, you know, or people who think like, wow, we are in Czech, we are in Prague, let's get, let's buy some girls and let's buy some wheat, you know, and let's buy some other drugs there. Yeah. And they put everything and they are happy, you know. They will go back to, I don't know where, back home, they will get to the UK and say, yeah, it was great. Cannabis is free almost, and it's everywhere, you know. But yeah, so I hope you I answered your question.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a good point of view, actually. So, Mr. Jose, you have also written several books, which you spoke about earlier. How to grow cannabis indoors and how to grow cannabis outdoors. Firstly, do you have a preference for indoors or outdoors?
I'm mostly indoor guy because I can do it all year round. And I'm not very patient, so I can do more harvest indoor. You know, so, and I like indoor growing because I also like all the things I can do there, like all things I can control there. Like outdoor is nice, but as I said, you can do it only a few months a year, and if there is a rainy weather or dry weather, you have to take care about plants a different way. And so I'm mostly indoor.
So you have quite a short season over there. And in summer is your, believe it or not, wettest season. So you get more rainfall in summer than any other season. So that could, do you find that people are experiencing mold issues and things like this? If they have a series of rains towards harvest, it's already getting really short photo period, really short day length, temperatures are dropping, you're getting a lot of moisture. Is that the biggest concern there for the outdoor side of things?
Here in Czech, it's like not, I can say, it's, maybe it's not so hot weather as in Australia, or for sure. The outdoor flowering strains are very popular here, so you don't have any too much issues with that. And with mold, we here in Czech you have troubles with wet weather, especially in the end of the season. What is also the big issue, because you take care about your plants for 4 months, and when you have a nice big buds, and then wet autumn will come, you also have troubles with mold and all this stuff around. Yeah, so. It's also the reason why I'm not so outdoor.
Yeah, well, mate, I've seen your yields and they're bloody good. Like, they're great. I'd just like to talk about, in a legal setting, what are growers like? What are the techniques growers are using? Especially you know, growing indoors, you have the advantage to use a lot of different techniques. I'd just like to go over those.
Yeah, I tell you that now, after maybe more than maybe 12 years, I got back to the bubbler stuff, like deep water culture.
Yeah.
And it is something I was beginning with, you know, and I also almost forgot how good technique it is, you know. So this is something I'm amazed at the moment about, because we started the session with DWC 4 weeks or 3 weeks ago, and plants are very, very nice. And also what is something I like is a passive system, especially I use Autobot quite often, and it has also some pros and cons, but at the moment we are trying also organic way of growing in Autobots, and we had a first harvest and it was really, really nice plants in it and quite quick. So I didn't count with seedlings, because I prepare always seedlings like before I start the regular growing cycle. So I count always the length of growth cycle from since I put it into the proper system to the harvest. So let's say from clone to harvest or from seedling to harvest, not from seed, because when you grow from seeds, it takes 3 weeks usually before you get a proper seedling. Yeah. But you don't need too much space for that. So even if you grow like commercially, you don't need too much space to make seedling. But you need too much lots of space to grow big plants in the end. Yeah. So we were finished in 2 months, and we had a very, very nice harvest from autopotten organic growing way. But for example, in hydroponic system, I always use mineral fertilizers. And if you handle with them the proper way, you always get a good result. What I don't like too much is I cannot say I don't like it too much, but coco is not my substrate or growing medium, because I use it quite often, but if I compare it to other, there's always we always have problems with flies, with
scarab fly,
fungus gnats, you know. And if it dries out, it's also hard to get it wet again. You know, it's like and you have also lots of different quality of cocoa substrate depending on the company from which you buy it. You know, so but I cannot say I said I don't like it, but I rather can say that it's one of the substrate which is a little bit more complicated than other systems from my point of view. Yeah. So, and also we are also focusing standard production, you know, standardization of production. And hydroponic systems in this way is something where you can really control everything what you give to your plants. But so, if I have a chance to start my own production, if I have a license and if I can start to produce cannabis and sell it to people legally, I will probably combine both ways. So I will probably grow something organic, completely organic way to satisfy people who are looking for this. And I'm also trying to get my impact on the nature as small as possible. So it would be definitely something I was familiar with, but I will also offer people something from hydroponic systems. So, but I don't know if I have if I will have chance to have a license in my life. Probably not, because it doesn't go this way. That everybody who can start the production.
Yeah. So you talk about your preferred method in terms of your medium, DWC being your favorite medium. In your books, in your indoor books, you talk about lighting, go into a bit of depth about lighting. You clearly know this stuff. So can you tell us about the different options available to you as a researcher for lighting and what are the benefits of each type of lighting? And then tell us what is your preferred method of lighting?
Mm-hmm. Light is talking about light is I have to tell that when I started to write first indoor book about growing, I stopped in a section about light because I found out at that time it was like about lumens and all this stuff around, and I I know that it's not the right way we should look to the light for plants growing, and I was get into photosynthetic active radiation, and I found out that it's not very easy to measure it. It's not very easy to find some information about it in connection with cannabis. So I contacted some old guy who was like a scientist who was into the light, and I asked him a few questions, and he told me that I'm absolutely crazy the way I'm, that I don't know anything about light, and I look to it completely wrong way. So I said, okay, I will probably not join the university about physics, you know. So I asked him, but he answered me a few questions and he opened my eyes a little bit. So it ended that I rented a laboratory in Electrotechnical Institute in Prague, and I started to I got some lights from a local distributor, what is GrowShop CZ, and they gave me some stuff for testing. Also, because renting a laboratory was not the cheapest way how to do all this stuff, but it was more precise, the most precise. So I was trying to get money from companies to support this research. So at the time, also Homebox company gave me some support to do this job, and also fertilizing company Advanced Hydroponica Holland. So I always have to thank them, because without their money, I cannot do it. And I also gave some my money into it, because it was really, really expensive thing I did. And yeah, and we tested. I made a big board into the grow tent of 1.2 by 1.2 meter. I made 48 holes in a special measuring desk, and I get into the tent under the board and put the sensor to each hole. And the second guy from Electrotechnical Institute make the records and make graphs for me and all this stuff around. So after that, I tested 30, 50 different light sources, and I got the photosynthetic flux density in each in 40.49 points, so I can make average and maximum and minimum. So yeah, it was very nice. And after that, I after a few years, I bought my own spectrometer, and I ordered a special positioning system. I have one like a robotic system who move my spectrometer on the surface, and I do only records, so I can do it by my own in my house. So it's much cheaper, and I can do it every time I want. And nowadays, I'm mostly using LEDs for mother plants. I'm using MH lamps, metal halide lamps, and CMH ceramic metal halide for mothers. It's like the way I like. And for production, 80% we use LEDs at the moment. And I would like to continue this way, because we have a really good result, and energy consumption in total of production rooms is much lower with it, you know. And we will see. I cannot say now how long will be the lifespan of LEDs comparing to HPS in practical measuring, you know, because I think you have to use the same light for, let's say, 3-4 years before you will see that it really works after this such a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, but from my point of view, it's very important to find the proper LEDs on the market because there is a lots of manufacturers from all around the world, mostly from China, of course. And it's very important to have a proper cooling system for it. If you don't cool your LEDs, the power is getting down quite rapidly. And so from that reason, first LEDs was full of ventilators, you know. But it's like a vacuum system. It's like vacuum cleaner. So if you have a ventilator in your LED, all the dust can get inside. So it's also not the way I would like to go. I prefer passively cooled LEDs or cooled with water, of course. It's also a very effective way.
Are you using COBs?
No.
Okay. Short answer. Very good. Is there a reason? So have you tested the chip on boards?
Yeah, I did.
And they didn't perform?
I tell you that there are two ways how I test it. The first, how I test the light. So the first is, let's say, in my laboratory, when I switch the light on, make the measurement, then switch the light off and send it back to manufacturer or I will keep it. And the second way how I tested it, that I tested in grow room, which is what is much, much better. And in a grow room, when you're growing, it's you can see how hot are the LEDs after some time of operation, and also how it react to environment which is in your grow room. So yeah, this is two way how I test the lights.
You were talking about the importance of people finding the right light for their grow room, and I'm sure you're familiar with a few of these terms like PPFD, you know, micromoles per joule. Could you give some like things that people should look out for when they're searching for a light?
What to look for when they choosing the light? First of all, I'm looking how it's cooled. This is the first thing I look for, you know. I prefer, as I told you, I prefer passively cooled system, but it should be really good make. You cannot say it for the first, when I look for the light for the first time and I can see there is not enough material to cool the chips, because you can see it's very light. Yeah, it's not solid, you know. So you can see that it's the first problem. Second thing, it should have some IP protection. Yeah, so it could be protected against the water and dust, of course. So it has IP. I don't remember the numbers now. Sorry, but it should be water resistant. And this is two main things. And yeah, we can talk about chip on board. I cannot say that it's like something very bad, but what I know about how it works is that sometimes on chip on boards there are on one chip there are more diodes with a different color. And different color usually need different voltage, you know. And if you have different voltage on one chip, you can put only one voltage in a chip. You know? So there are only two ways how to handle with it. You give more power than diodes who's producing color spectrum which needs a lower voltage will die sooner, or you make lower voltage and then you get not all the light you can get from all the diodes. You know, I hope I explain it good. Yes. So, yeah.
So you are you using something like Fluence or like a name brand for your LED? Or?
Yeah, yeah. At the moment, we also have one light from Osram. And the most light we use is from Sunlight. It's from Austrian producer, and they also use Osram chips. Yeah, so,
very cool. Can we talk a bit about the importance of pH and electrical conductivity? We haven't really gone into the very basics of hydroponic growing particularly. Mm-hmm. Can you tell our listeners a bit about the importance? You as a researcher, you need to get things mm-hmm. really wired in and get consistency from what you're doing. Yeah, so a bit of the basics would be great.
Yeah, it's a good question because lots of people start to grow by a pH meter and EC meter, measure it for the first grow cycle, and they think they don't need it anymore, and they start to use the same amount of fertilizers and same amount of pH adjuster. But you need to measure it all the time, every time and all the time and every time you grow. Because, for example, if you have a wrong pH, your plants cannot get all the nutrients and all the elements they need for their growth. For example, it's not a long time ago, a friend told me, "Hey man, I had problem for the third time with clones. I have great clones. I use the same system for many years, and now I have some problems. My clones die every time." So I asked him a few questions. And I know him for a long time, so I know he's a really good grower. So. And I didn't find out what's wrong, but I didn't visit his grow room. We were only talking about it, and next time we met, he told me, "I know what was wrong because I started to use one additive, and this additive higher the pH to 8 point something, and I have to cut it down. You always have to cut it down." And it was only one additive he started to use, and he had very high pH, and the plants were not able to get the food they need. Yeah, so, and it works all the time, so it's good to keep pH on, let's say, 5.8 to 6.3, 6.5 is maximum from my point of view. So if you are not sure, it's good to keep between 6 and 6.5. It's always, you cannot do anything wrong with that. But I suggest 5.8 to 6.3 or 6.5, and I'm always started on a higher level and get lower during the growth cycle. And about EC, also, if you want to make always the same quality, you also need to measure it properly. So it's always good to plan it like every time in life. It's good to know what will be your next step. So I think it's good to it's always good to make a plan how you will grow. So mm-hmm. when you start, of course, sometimes you, when you don't grow all the time the same strain, or you don't have a very quality air condition system, so, or system for controlling environment. So in this case, you cannot know when you will probably switch to flowering, but you should have a plan what steps and what pH and EC will follow. Because if you make a plan, you write it, you put the list with what you will do in which time, and you put it to your grow room and you follow it, it's much easier to grow and to reach a nice result. Because when you see it on the wall, you will also follow it.
Yeah.
So because it's, you know, it's very easy to forgot what you made 1 week ago.
Yep. So when you're saying test it regularly, would you say every couple of days check your pH, check your EC levels, or every time it's you're going to feed check it?
Yeah, it's good to check it every time you go in your grow room, because it can change very quickly and very rapidly, and it depends also what watering system or growing system are you mm-hmm. you use. Because in circulating system, when you use the water solution again and again, it's very, very important to measure yeah. it every day. But you can measure it every day, even if you use run-to-waste system. And what is also very important, especially for pH, is to calibrate the pH meter or to change the probe as often as the manufacturer is suggesting it. Because otherwise, 0.5 here, 0.5 there, it's like should be more accurate.
Yeah.
And the probe for pH is very fragile, and really you have to calibrate quite often and change it. I calibrate it maximum every 4 weeks and change it every 6 months. Yeah, so
yeah, okay. And what would you say the EC should be sitting on?
Sorry, like EC probe.
Yeah. So what?
Or how high?
How EC high should yeah? Be? How high should this EC should be?
I usually start with 0.8 when I it depends also how what you have in your water when you, in the place where you grow.
And now so would also change
0.8.
Yeah. So it would also change as the plant grows. So you'll start at say 0.8 at a very young age of the plant. And as it gets older, mm-hmm. it should go higher?
Yeah, yeah. I get higher during the grow. I start at 0.8 and I'm ending in 2.2. So this is the way how I do it.
Yep.
But as I say, it very depends on what is in your water. So if your water have clear water have 0.2, it's okay. 0.4, it's also okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good reference point where you can start. But if you, for example, in Spain or in other countries, they have like clear water sometimes at 0.8. Yeah. So if your water has this EC when it's clear, it's necessary to filter it before you use it, because you don't know what is where the 0.8 came from. So you don't know what is in the water. So yep. It's better to clean it before you use it for our plants, because it doesn't matter how much fertilizers you add, because it does matter, of course, but plants are able to absorb like 2.4 EC. So if you start, if your clear water has 0.8, you can add only fertilizers in amount of 1.4. You know what I mean? Six? Okay, 9.6, yeah. So, but if your water has 0.2, you can add 2.2 to your of fertilizers. So you control like much more, you have much higher control on what you give to your plants.
Mm-hmm. Would it be better to use like distilled water or just filter your tap water?
It depends. If you, for example, my tap water is for my garden, you know, so I don't have, there is no chlorine or other stuff. But if you have tap water with chlorine, you have to let it be for a few hours before you use it. When I was living in a city, I make get it to my reservoir and leave it for one day before all the chlorine go out. You know.
Yep.
So,
Josep, could we just ask about what I call grow room etiquette? So, keeping your grow room sterile and clean. Can you tell us a little bit about what you guys do to keep your room clean and free of pests and pathogens?
It's difficult way, a difficult thing because you know when you grow plants, it's always some rubbish from that, you know. I'm trying to. I'm using some agent which I can put to humidifier. Like I use pyrolyte, which is based on chlorine as well. And for the substrate itself, this is also a problem of cocoa, you know, because in cocoa you never knows what who already lives in your cocoa, you know. So we are. I mostly use the English words some animals like you put inside the some parasites. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like some parasites who kill the
some friendly bugs in there.
Yeah. Friendly bacteria and friendly living organisms who can help you fight against the fungus, gnats, and spider mites, and so on.
I'd just like to ask.
And it's good also. And also, if you have closed system, like if you are using ventilators and you suck the air from outside your grow room, it's of course you can get lots of insects in there, so it's necessary to filter also air on the intake, or much better is to have air condition inside your grow room, add your CO2 in there and to get from outside as low amount of air as possible.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'd just like to ask, because I know in a lot of places pesticides are banned, and they've had to resort to different methods of dealing with them, such as amino acids for powdery mildew and beneficial pests. I'd just like to ask, what are the methods that you personally use?
For what? I missed the beginning.
Because like in quite a lot of places pesticides are banned.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'd just like to touch on like what methods that you use.
Yeah, I use the best method what is a prevention. Yeah, so I don't use I'm trying to not use any pesticides. Yeah. So all the I'm trying to watch the plants, check every day if there is something which should not be there. And if you use organic way of get rid of all the insects, and when you start on time, you have very high success rate. Yeah. So, for example, against fungus gnats, we are using I don't remember the like nematodes.
Yep. Neem oil.
Nematode.
Nematodes.
Nematodes. Sorry. Yeah. Nematodes. Nematodes. Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So this is the this is the proper word for English. So we use nematodes, which we put inside the grow medium, and they eat all the larvae stage of fungus gnats. You know, and for spider mites and all these stuff around, if you filter your air inside, it's very low risk that you will get something like that. But if you get, and if you take care about your plants and watch your plants every day, if you see first spider, you have to order something what will eat him, you know.
Very cool.
So prevention is the best way how to deal with all the insects and all the diseases as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. Very cool.
You know, I tell something that, like, when lots of people are preparing their grow room, they look like this is too expensive. I cannot pay for better filtration system, I cannot pay for air condition. But in the end, you can get much better harvest. Yeah. So I don't know what's the price of wheat in your country, but usually if you pay more at the beginning, you save more money for wheat, which you don't have to buy anywhere, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you can, if you have a good, if you grow for your own and you invest some money to your grow room, then you can grow only two times. You will maybe need to grow less, you know. So if you spend low amount of money, you will have to make a four harvest a year. And if you invest a little bit more, you can make only two harvest a year for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can go for holiday or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I think that's some great advice to wrap things up. To basically say, the more you put in at the start, the more you get out at the end. And
exactly,
it always works that way. If you do it right from the start, you're rewarded.
Yeah, exactly. It works also in other aspects of life now.
Without a doubt. Jose, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, mate. It's been really cool. Great to chat with a Czech, first Czech to be on the show. So thank you very much for representing Czechia, Česká republika. Děkujeme moc, Josef. Ty jsi super, super hodný. Děkujeme.
Díky. It was a pleasure for me to talk with you, and if you will in the future would like to repeat our session, I'm always here to talk with you, because it was a pleasure, really.
We'll have you back for sure, mate. Yes. It's been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
See ya.
Cheers. Ciao.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Canter. Any guest views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guests and not necessarily those of the hosts. Canter strongly suggests listeners research local, state, and federal laws and regulations before conducting any cannabis-related activity.